two gene mutations in that ATP7B gene. It's just one microscopic thing about me as a person, and like I'd like to talk about something else. I can't tell you how many times a week or a day I still hear people say like, oh, my doctor told me you can't inherit a breast cancer risk from your father's side of the family because men don't have breast tissue.
Genetics isn't always black and white, and the emotions and decisions surrounding genetics and genetic testing can be even more complex. Welcome to Patient Stories with Gray Genetics. I'm Eleanor Griffith, certified genetic counselor and the founder of Gray Genetics, an independent telehealth genetic counseling and consulting service. It seems like there are constantly headlines in the news about genetics, but few news stories focus on the patient experience. At Gray Genetics, we are collecting patient stories, your stories. Every other Tuesday, we bring you a patient story related to genetics. If you'd like to share your story, send an email to podcast@graygenetics.com.
That's it. That is their genetics training, 1 month in their first year of med school.
This is Patient Stories. I'm Kelsey Crocker, a second-year genetic counseling student at Sarah Lawrence College, and I'm currently rotating at Gray Genetics. So today I'm interviewing Abby Patnode. We previously interviewed Abby in 2019, where she shared her diagnosis of Wilson disease and her experiences in graduate school at Sarah Lawrence College. Abby has been a genetic counselor for about 4 years now, is that correct?
Yeah, a four going on 5 years.
Okay, cool. And last we spoke to you, you'd accepted a genetic counseling job at a general genetics clinic, actually where you got your diagnosis, right?
Yeah.
That's so cool. Are you still working at this clinic or have you changed jobs?
So I did change jobs for a short time, but now I am back in that same general genetics clinic in Rhode Island.
Oh, cool. And when you went back, what was your reasoning for like switching around?
Oh, just, you know, time for a change and family dynamics and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm very happy to be back in Rhode Island and back with this team.
Great to hear. Okay. And what are some patient stories that have really stuck out with you in your experience?
Oh, my gosh. So many. I tend to work a little bit more heavily in my clinic in the cancer realm, but still do have a good mix of like peds and adult in there as well. So I'd have to say there was just a case recently where we diagnosed somebody with a pathogenic variant in P10. And just this summer, we've been working with like, okay, you know, coping with that new diagnosis and going through the screening recommendations and how we have to get all like, it's a big checklist at the beginning to get the thyroid ultrasound and, you know, all these different things done, and how really so important all of that is, because we got the thyroid ultrasound and like the TSH and all these levels are kind of funky, and we found an early stage cancer, and he just had surgery and called me and like left me this sweetest voicemail of like, you know, I'm just so happy that we went through this process and like this is actually what we were, you know, trying to do. And that's just a recent example of really all the things that we hope to be able to do, the early detection and early diagnosis and leading to a change in their management that is for the better. So That's one that sticks out from recently.
Awesome. Yeah, to get ahead of it almost as much as we can.
As much as we can, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how has your experience with Wilson disease impacted your genetic counseling practice, would you say?
I think it really influences me a bit more on the pediatric side. I think coming from my patient perspective, something that I struggled with was, okay, I have this diagnosis now and I'm seeing all these doctors and that's all well and good. But a lot of well-meaning family members just kind of forgot that I had other things that were fun and, you know, important to me besides my Wilson disease diagnosis. So whenever I saw someone, this is all we talked about, all anybody cared about. What were your levels? Did you take your medicine that day? Blah, 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 blah. All coming from people who love and care about me and want to make sure that I'm healthy. But from like a, I guess, a mental health standpoint, like, you got to focus on something else sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. And remember that that one gene mutation, actually two gene mutations in that ATP7B gene, is just one microscopic thing about me as a person. And like, I'd like to talk about something else, you know? So I kind of emphasize that when we make new diagnoses in a kid or a teen, or just try to help those family members, like, yeah, you're going to cope and go through all of these things, but don't forget that your child is still your child who has a million other interesting things about them, and might not want to focus on this with every single conversation.
Mm-hmm. Right. So taking more of that holistic approach to, you know, children and what they're experiencing.
Exactly.
Cool. I know in the previous episode you mentioned the importance of including younger patients in the process and not only speaking to their parents. Do you find that something you're still doing?
Yeah, definitely still that too. Even like the really little kiddos, I do try to include them as much as you can and as is, you know, age appropriate. As even like trying to get a cheek swab from a two-year-old. If you don't explain to them what you're going to do and how fun it is to brush your teeth like that, you know, you're not going to get that sample from them. So it does help a lot, as well as it, I think it's an important part of, you know, getting their consent as best and age appropriate you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very cute. You also don't want to get the bite, the chomp.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to get bit either.
And where do you see yourself in 5 years' time?
I mean, right now, I feel like I do see myself still in this clinic. I'm so happy with my clinic job. I think it's the perfect blend for me. But I imagine our roles changing a little bit. This year in particular, my team and I have really focused on ways to make things more efficient with like point of care testing, first line testing getting done before a patient gets here or like another clinic like neurology ordering their baseline microarray when we know we're going to do microarray or something along those lines, which has really freed up more space for us to do back end counseling on the more important, like a positive test result. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to really try to continue to do more things like that. And I'm sure we're going to see more doctors ordering genetic testing and us doing more of back end counseling. And I think we'll just try to ebb and flow like with the genetics world. Hopefully getting bigger and more broader testing. Mm-hmm. Clinical genomes would be great for every patient, or maybe not every patient, but I imagine us just expanding and, you know, broadening our access to serve our patient population in Rhode Island.
Okay. And you mentioned in your previous episode that you were hoping to be more involved with the Wilson disease community in the future. Mm-hmm. Have you had the opportunity to be involved? And what has this looked like?
Yes. So for a couple of years, I was able to work as like a patient advocate with the Wilson Disease Association and attend some of their like patient advocacy I don't know whether you call it like a summit or a gathering or something along those lines. I forget the term that they used. Unfortunately, that did kind of disband after or during COVID and hasn't been restarted. But for those few years that I did do it, it was really rewarding and actually really cool to meet other people with Wilson disease.
Mm-hmm. Did you find that you had similar stories or similar paths?
I found that everybody's story was a little bit different, even if there were some little semblances of, you know, common features. It's always like one little thing kind of popped up and everyone's like, huh. And then it was like another little thing popped up and eventually they got to their diagnosis too.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this, you having gone through your diagnostic journey. Is Wilson disease something that is on your radar when you're seeing kids and you're seeing certain symptoms, or is it something that hasn't really come up?
Oh my gosh, it's always on my radar. when my team and I do like our weekly case conferences, someone will mention like, oh, I'm seeing this child or young adult for abnormal LFTs. I'm like, Wilson, could it be? What's their copper level? Has that been ordered? To date, I am still the only Wilson disease diagnosis that has come out of our office in the last like 12 years or something. We've gotten a number of like rule out Wilson, but I have not made any diagnoses. And I would love to. I would love to be able to be a resource to a family where they get this new diagnosis. And, you know, maybe they're seeing my colleague and they could say, oh my gosh, like, we don't know anybody with this. Who are we going to talk to? And they can say, well, we have someone right here mm-hmm. who can tell you about her experience. I would love to be able to do that.
Yeah, almost as obviously a genetic counselor, but also a resource for people and someone to who also is a self-advocate and can advocate for others as well.
Yeah. Awesome. Because we do that with some of our other patients. If I have like two children with the same condition, maybe like I think Angelman I saw recently. We have a new baby with Angelman, and then I knew another patient has like an older child with Angelman, and we with their both of their consents were able to connect them, and like they like to chat about their kids and you know what each other is going through. So I would love to be able to do something like that for another Wilson family.
Mm-hmm. I hope you do one day. Yeah.
One day.
One day. How do you see, we talked about this a bit, but how do you see the role of the genetic counselor evolving? And where do you see your place in these changes? I know that's a big question.
Yeah, no, I think that a lot of it, like we just saw each other at NSGC. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the theme of NSGC, you know, was sharpening our focus too. And so I do see our field kind of shifting more towards genetic counselors doing more back end counseling, where some tests has already been done and we're interpreting these complex results and how is this going to change into medical management and all of those sorts of things. And in that way, we're really honing in skills or using the most of our skills, where pretest counseling is I still believe so important, but I think our skill set is best used kind of after we have that test result sometimes. So that's where I think I would see the shift going, to really kind of highlight our skills and our abilities.
If we are going to shift to more of this post-test, do you think we may need more education for other providers in that pre-test space?
One area I do feel like we could improve on is teaching other providers, at least the basics of genetics. I can't tell you how many times a week or a day I still hear people say like, oh, my doctor told me you can't inherit a breast cancer risk from your father's side of the family because men don't have breast tissue, mm-hmm. which, as we all know, is a very false statement. Right. Or, you know, things along those lines, I absolutely still hear all the time. And at some point, we have theorized, like, how do we go out and teach all the primary care doctors in the state of Rhode Island and teach them like this is actually a risk, you should please refer to us, because we can try to get all the patients in and I can hire 5 more genetic counselors to see them all, but still we need people to refer to us, right? So we trust that these other providers out there know when to refer to us, and if they don't know, then we're not getting those referrals. So I don't know the right answer to it, but mm-hmm. I do think that we need more teaching and more like, I don't know, some updated crash course in genetics for primary care providers or something along those lines, just to teach them, like, this is when you refer and this is when you don't need to refer. The month of November is really busy for my clinic because we are doing all the teaching for the med students. We teach Brown medical student, first year medical students. They get 20 something lectures in genetics throughout the entire month of November. So it's a really dense month for them, but they do get more than the average medical school, which we're proud to provide that service. But that's it. That is their genetics training. 1 month in their first year of med school, mm-hmm. and they've got 3 more years of med school left, years of residency, fellowship, training, and they might forget what they learned all those years ago. So I would love to see some sort of update, like easy class that they could take that maybe has CMEs or something that entices them to look back on it.
Right. That's so interesting that you help teach medical students in their first year at Brown. I'm just out of curiosity, what does that curriculum look like? Are you covering like genetic testing, like genetic diseases, that sort mm-hmm. of thing?
Yep. So there, like I said, there's 20 something lectures that between all the genetic counselors and our medical geneticists that we work with that we all teach. We do testing methods like introduction to genetics and genetic conditions, biochemical metabolic genetic disorders, single gene disorders. They have one class just on like hereditary cancer syndromes, one class on dysmorphology. I and one of my coworkers teach ethics and genetics. Then we have a couple of small group classes where we like take all of the lectures and apply them to just case conversations, and we go through and like apply those, what they've learned so far, in kind of a more casual setting. So mm-hmm. they can, they have a population genetics lecture about how to do Bayes and Hardy-Weinberg and those things. And we try to cram in almost an entire genetic counseling education in 1 month.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you're taking me back with the Bayes to first year. Okay. Oh,
yeah. Always. And then I get to tell them we don't actually do those in practice. Yeah. They're just gonna test the person anyway, probably. But right. You still need to know how to do it, and it will be on your exam.
Yeah, I love in clinic when there's the joke of like, we could do a Bayes for this, but are we? Mm-hmm. Probably not.
No.
Okay, and what would you say to someone who's listening right now and thinking about or interested in the genetic counseling profession?
I think if anyone right now is interested in learning more about genetic careers in genetics or genetic counseling specifically, I know it can be really hard, especially with restraints on like post-COVID of like shadowing people and things, but reach out to people in the field that you're interested in. I think all of us, no matter how burnt out or tired at the end of the day we might be, are so willing and so wanting to teach other people about what we do, how important it is. And I think we're all just really passionate about our own careers and would love to share that passion with others. So I'm always happy to talk to prospective students or people who are applying to genetics. I like to do like do the open houses for Sarah Lawrence, like the virtual open houses, and chat with students who are applying there. So I'd like to try to stay involved in the process too and encourage people to join our amazing field.
Patient Stories is an ad-free podcast and is unaffiliated with any genetic testing laboratories. We would like to keep it that way. To support the podcast with a donation, visit graygenetics.com/podcast/donate. If you would like to dig deeper into the professional issues raised by these patient stories, for $5 a month, you can join the Patient Stories Club. To sign up, look for the link in the podcast notes for this episode or visit graygenetics.com/podcast.
The information contained in this podcast does not constitute medical advice and is also not a substitute for genetic counseling. Neither Gray Genetics nor any of its guests makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Evaluation of an individual's personal and family health history is a crucial part of genetic counseling and any recommendation.